Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 42 of season 5 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth podcast. Welcome back, Heather.
Thank you for having me back. It's been so long. I think I've gotten even more gray hair. They're shiny.
Oh, wow. Okay. Just continue holding at the outer marker. So this minute 42 begins with Trudeau getting ready to make a speech and ends with a shot of the departure board getting filled up. So yesterday we ended things with just 2 seconds of our good friend Fred Dalton Thompson putting on a headset. We thought maybe he's listening to some music. And as this minute begins, he gives a speech that basically lasts almost the entire minute. It's 55 seconds.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So I'm gonna read through the whole thing instead of, stopping along the way. And then we'll go back to specific points, along the way. So he starts off by, he puts the headphones on. And he goes, "This is Dulles Approach to all aircrafts holding at Potomac VORTAC. We are experiencing some technical problems here. The weather conditions, which have been deteriorating all day, have now been complicated by an unforeseen human factor. This has affected all of our electronic equipment and the redundant backups as well. As a result, our nav and approach systems are down, and we expect to lose voice in another minute. We want you to continue holding at the outer marker as directed and wait for further instructions. As soon as we're back online, we'll expedite your landings on a fuel emergency basis. Good luck. God bless." So I think it's a great speech, but the joke of this whole movie is that, if at this point he would have just given a speech saying we're closing the airport, that would have been it. That's right. You'd think that logically, this type of problem, that's what you would do. That there are terrorists. That your systems are down. You have 1 minute to tell everybody what you want to tell them. So you know what? Don't land here. Land at National. Go to Thurgood Marshall, which wasn't called Thurgood Marshall at the time, in Baltimore. There are plenty of other places that you can go. I know that the passengers won't be happy that they're being that they're landing somewhere else, but I'll give you a hint. The people on the people on Windsor 114 would probably be much happier landing in Baltimore. I don't know.
Yes. There's a lot of options that could have been made here that would have worked a lot better, certainly for the safety of everyone. But I mean, that's kind of what happens in these kinds of movies and scenarios. And it's one of those things that drives me crazy, but I also understand it's just part of it. It's the, hey, there's a problem here, and someone is staunch and going, nope, don't want to hear you. La, 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 la. I cannot hear you. The whole entire willful ignorance. Like McClane has been warning everybody from the start of this. Hey, we got problems. Hey, something's going on here. Hey, why aren't you guys paying attention? And everybody keeps blowing him off. So while it isn't a rational reaction,
it's needed for the plot.
It's needed for the plot, but it is also consistent with everybody else in the movie to go, no, we could solve this problem, but instead, let's try and make everything seem okay on the outside, which also, in fairness, is something that I believe could happen.
Yes.
Maybe not in this particular scenario. But we also look at this, and this came out, I think, in 1990.
Yes.
I mean, you have people smoking in the airport, and you have the reporter that comes into the I don't know, what is the place called where all the air people are, where Trudeau is?
It's no big deal. The traffic control tower. The control tower.
Thank you. The control tower. But so you have all these things happening, which also today, in today's day and age, as a post 9/11 society, it's really mind boggling to see. It's in some ways it's kind of like, oh, okay. So that's what you guys are doing. Yeah. No wonder everything went to shit. But you know, it's definitely, there's definitely a consistency with it through the movie, but it is one of those tropes that drives me absolutely insane.
Right. But,
and also too, in his speech, he mentions all of these things and the reasons for it. There's a blizzard outside, man. You can, but he says unforeseen human factors. Like if I'm a pilot and I'm hearing that unforeseen human factors, what the heck is going on here?
Yes.
I'm going to be fairly alarmed.
Yeah, like why does he even need to mention that? Just like we have problems with weather conditions, you know, and to say that we're losing power and you know, we're going to lose voice. So as soon as you say that, again, it goes back to the logical explanation of, okay, we're temporarily closing the airport. You know, it's that simple.
Yep. And problems are solved that way. You get your terrorists who can land or figure out what you're going to do about the terrorists who are going to land. And you've saved all these innocent people who are in flight. And for some of us that are really, really afraid of flying, running out of fuel in the sky is not something we want to think about.
Just yeah, saying. But you wouldn't be aware of the fact that this, you know, this is what was happening, because you are not in the cockpit listening in, you know, and you're also not Victor listening on his own radio. You know, most people.
Listen, it's the 90s now. Clearly, people can go wherever they want on planes here in control towers. There are no rules. It's the Wild West of the air.
Correct. No, that's more or less what it is. But it's just funny the way that they portray it here. You know, he gives this 52-second speech that could have been just, you know, 10 seconds by saying, you know, we're having problems. We're closing the airport. This movie's over. You know, that's more or less what they would have said.
Exactly.
You know, and I love the fact that he says, you know, it's affected all of our equipment and the redundant backups, meaning we do have redundant backups, but they don't work because, you know, whoever has, you know, this human factor has also dealt with the redundant backups. You know, because...
Which, again, as a pilot, if you're getting this information... Your level of concern has to be pretty high.
Yeah.
What? We can't land. They're not sending us elsewhere. What the heck is going
on? That's right. And I mean, one of the things that they do, I like the way that they do this, is during his speech, we get shots of four different cockpits. Okay.
Yeah. And guess who one of those
people we'll get there. Were? We'll get there in a second. So the first one, one we get is the Northeast Airlines crew, which is, you know, the crew of Holly's plane. You know, we see them and they do have concern on their faces listening to this, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Then we see a shot of an external shot of a Fuji Air plane. And then we see the crew and one of them even starts talking in Japanese, I guess, trying to explain to the others what it is that's being said, possibly. Then we have another plane, which you can't really tell what that fake airline is, but they actually linger quite a long time on the crew of that one. And the pilot looks really familiar, but I couldn't find him on IMDb.
Yeah. Me either. I looked him up and then I went back again right before we recorded today to look up again, just because I thought maybe I'd somehow missed it, but I didn't find him either. Well, now I feel validated because you also
I mean the design on the plane is very cool, you know, but you can't tell what country it is or what, you know, or the name of the flight. Maybe in the final scene in the movie they'll show them again, but they don't, none of these three characters or the Fuji Air characters are listed in IMDb. They don't get credit because none of them, I guess, have anything to say. Except in Japanese, maybe. I don't know. And then they show the fourth plane, which is the one that you were referring to, which is Windsor Air.
Yes.
And then we get a shot of the co-pilot, and then we get a shot of the engineer, and then we get a shot of the pilot, who is Miles O'Brien.
Yes, Cole Meany. I get so excited whenever I see Cole Meany in anything, though. He's so wonderful.
Yeah.
But yes, most people know him as... as Miles O'Brien from Star
mm-hmm.
Trek.
Star Trek: The Next Generation and from Deep Space
and
Nine.
Deep Space Nine, which is how I go to bed every night. So I hear Cole Meany's voice going to bed. Usually he's stressed out, but
that's true.
That's his job.
Well, it's because of his wife, you know. What's her name? Kiki? I'm trying to remember his wife.
Yeah, and she's always having children, and then she's losing children, and then somebody else is having their children. And Deep Space Nine gets weird if you haven't watched it, folks.
I have to go back and rewatch that one of these days. Next Generation, about 3 years ago, I went and rewatched it, and I loved rewatching it. It was a lot of fun. So this is one that, you know, my eventual goal is to rewatch then Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise. You know, I mean, personally, I love Picard. I think Picard is the best of all of them. I'm just so enthralled by the ideas of Picard, except for the fact that, you know, Picard is basically a long movie each season, you know, because the shows on, you know, on the old, the episodes on the old shows were all standalone. You know, there were things that were connected here and there, but they're mostly standalone. And nowadays, the way they make TV shows is they want to have an arc that goes across the entire show. There's, you know, procedurals will do it a little differently, but most shows, the idea, even the Star Wars shows, you know, the idea is, okay, instead of giving you a 2-hour movie in the theater, we're now going to give you an 8-hour movie that you can watch, you know, 45 minutes or 50 minutes of each week for the next 2 months. So
I enjoy that, but I also enjoy side quests. I like the standalone episodes. They can be fun. You have the ability to be more creative with those. And also too, for someone like myself and my husband, when we pull up a Deep Space Nine episode when we're going to bed at night and it's halfway through it, we could go, oh, hey, we can just kind of watch this episode and figure out what's going on. But 90% of the time we're like, I have no idea what's going on. Okay. And then eventually we actually watch the series all together and we're like, you know what? We still don't know what's going on, even though we're watching it all in order.
Oh, wow.
But that's just the beauty of Deep Space Nine. No, we get it. We get it. Yeah. It's just wild. But yeah, there's that aspect of it too, where it's harder for people to join in on a series if you do have those long running themes, which I prefer. But once I'm in,
well, I like the long term you know, plots also. But for me, and you and I talked about this a little bit, you know, before we were recording, I'm a completionist. So, you know, for me, like when Picard was on, I didn't watch it every week. I waited till they finished it. And then I sat down and watched all 10 episodes one after the other in order to, you know, then watch it, you know, on a whole, as opposed to every week having to try to say to myself, wait a second, what happened last week? You know, and then it just flows much better when you're watching it that way. I've done that for all the Star Wars things also.
I agree. And the irony of this is that's how we used to have to watch all of our shows. And with commercial breaks.
No, forget about that. And what about reruns? You know, back then they would have 24 episodes or 26 episodes or 22 episodes, depending on the show, from October through May. And, you know, every week you would say, oh, it's going to be a new episode of Quantum Leap, right? And then you start watching it and you're like, I've seen this one already. You know, this this was last season. This was on earlier this season. You know, they do that. I remember, you know, I used to always read in TV Guide, you know, whether shows were reruns or not, and then you would know whether it's worth rewatching it or not. But nowadays they do that less.
I started doing that when I got older too. Yeah, but I'm like you too. There's only a few shows that I'll watch week to week. I'll do anything Mando, Star Wars. I'm watching it week to week. I can't. I mean, sometimes I actually make it a couple weeks, but that's because I watch them with husband and child. So we all have to be on the same page to watch them with our schedules. But otherwise, I would watch them week to week.
Mando, I actually, even this last season that just came out, I waited. It's very difficult, I agree, because I'm trying to not catch spoilers and stuff like that. But I like, you know, watching it all in a row, because then you see how the story plays out.
It's much more enjoyable. Yeah, it's much more enjoyable because it is. It's like a long movie. There's a few side quests that you get in there, but usually the side quests have some kind of information that's pertinent to the main storyline
Right.
too. So it is. It's far more enjoyable to watch it that way. But I mean, that's one of the great things about streaming services now too, is you can binge watch, you can watch all of those things in a row. And a lot of them, like Netflix, I love it when they're like, oh, here, we're giving you a new season of
Right.
Witcher. We're giving you all of the episodes at once. And I'm like, taking the day off of work. Thank you very
Yes.
much. I do that once a year,
Only once
so
a year, that's pretty
say.
good.
But it is. If
Yeah.
that, actually. If that. I think season two I didn't do it on, but I did do it on season one. I took the whole day off. It was, I know, because it was released in December and I remember it. I enjoyed myself all day long.
And have you rewatched it since?
Oh yeah. Witcher, I've probably rewatched that like three or four times at least,
But those
maybe
times you
even
didn't have to
more.
take the whole day off.
There's only two. No, because I already know what's gonna happen. I've read all the books too. I've played all the video games. I'm familiar with the lore. Now it's one of those things that's just I can put on as background noise and I know what they're gonna say before they say it.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Now, I was very impressed that Trudeau is very calm the entire time that he's giving the speech.
Yes, he's very
Yes, he
professional.
doesn't panic at all. And if I was in his situation and I knew that there were terrorists around that were planning something really big, I'd be much more trepidatious with the way that I'm telling people about these things. But that's why they bring real actors in to do this
No.
stuff.
Well, that's true, but I would hope that in a situation such as this, if it were to occur, that you would have someone that was calm and able to handle it, because he's in a high stress job anyway. Like, no matter what, that's even as a bureaucrat, it's still a stressful job. You have to hold yourself together in situations that other people may
Right,
otherwise fall
that's
apart
true.
in. But he does, like you said, he did a really good job of it, and Fred Thompson did a good job of being Trudeau in it. The combination of the two, it ended up being
Yeah,
a
that's
really good
true. I
moment in
mean,
the movie.
I'm still a little surprised that he's so candid, by at the same time being deceptive. He's telling them information, but he's really telling them nothing. We know because we know
Exactly.
the full story, but all of these 12 pilots and engineers that we just saw that are listening in have absolutely no idea what's going on. They hear what he's
Now,
saying, but they don't understand.
which is why they're also being professional and doing what they're supposed to. But you can see, and I think that's partly why, well, they do four different planes and four different sets of pilots. So you're getting an idea by watching that part too, that there are a lot of
Yes.
flights out there. It's not just Holly's
And they're from
plane
all
that's
different
out there.
places.
So you have
They're
the
very
bigger scope of
international.
things. Yes, they're from all over. So you have the scale of it, which, that elevates all of the risk
Yes.
factor here too. It's not just them. All of these people could potentially die. This is a big deal. So it does that aspect of it, but you get to see their reactions too, which are, oh, something isn't right, but we're going to do what we have to do because that's our
Right.
jobs and that's what we're here to do. It's all very professional with that underlying sinister feeling underneath it.
Right.
It's very effective.
Straight. And we get a shot of one of the controllers behind him, and you see like his screen is flickering. Which again goes back to the idea, that Stuart was talking about, about them being deaf and blind, which they weren't either at the time. They're still able to see everything, and they're still able to hear, and they were still able to speak. He didn't turn them off yet. He just saw that there were certain things that they couldn't change, that type of thing. And then we get a shot of Lorenzo, who gives a huge sigh, as this is all going on. I love Dennis Franz. And Barnes just looks around.
Me too. Speaking of someone who's not holding their crap together very well, he's doing a much, much lower level of job as far as that is concerned
Yeah.
next to Trudeau. He's much more
Yes.
reactive.
Yes. And then the shot changes and we get a shot of the main terminal on the inside. You see in the distance a blurry shot of something that says departures with a whole bunch of yellow text in the distance. You can't read exactly what it says there. And Right before this, we heard Trudeau say, he goes, all right, change the boards. You know, so then, you know, the last few seconds of this minute, you know, we see a woman getting on an escalator. We see a whole bunch of people standing, just sitting and standing around, I guess, waiting for some loved one to show up or for them to fly themselves. We see on the left-hand side a poster of an ad that says Toast of the Slopes. Okay, now I looked that up. Do you know what that is? It is a slogan for Miller Genuine Draft Beer. And it's great. I mean, the shot that they have here is of someone doing, I guess, a ski jump. You know, we don't see the top of it, so we can't see that it says.
I don't recommend drinking beer and going skiing.
Probably.
Bad things. Bad things. Yeah, you're absolutely right, though. I see the skis now.
and then we have like two, I guess, sets of payphones. But above them, it basically says car rental info. Now, I remember that. I remember you used to get into an airport and there would be a bank of telephones that you would go over and you would pick them up and you would call whatever rental car agency that you were using, whether it was, Alamo or Best or Avis or whatever. And you know, you would call them directly and they'll say, okay, so what you need to do is we have a van that'll come around and pick you up and bring you to the thing or whatever it is. You know, so I just find it really cool that they have two rows I guess you can maybe call them clusters of phones just for that. But so that would basically mean that all these people are waiting at the arrivals because you don't need them by the departures, you know, so.
No. So have you ever been to the airport during the holidays like this?
Yeah, sure. Not necessarily. I don't think in Dulles, but yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious because other than when I was very young, picking my dad up a few times and we never went in, we just wait outside.
Well, you could have just left your car because you didn't want to get your car towed like John McClane does.
Correct. Correct. My mom also, sometimes his flights would come back at weird times of night too. And my mom would not go into any public place. Like, my mom wouldn't even go to a gas station to go. She smoked Virginia Slims when I was a kid. She wouldn't even go into the gas station if she didn't have makeup and her hair done when I was a kid. So there was no way we were going into the airport at, 9 or 10 o'clock at night without her makeup and hair done. So we'd sit and we'd just wait for him. But you see this in movies all the time. I've never been in an airport where it's been this packed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious if it's actually like this, the madness is actually a legit thing with this many people, person to person. Now, obviously, that's not the case because they don't let people in past certain points if you're picking someone up with security. But I mean, back in the late 80s, early 90s, I wonder how realistic this perspective of wall-to-wall people actually
is. I don't know. They needed it. So, and in plane, trains, and automobiles, they had a few shots with tons of people in the airports. So, and that's also, it's a different holiday season, but it is a holiday season. So I don't know.
It is.
And then we get a shot of two boards. One of them is departures and one of them is arrivals. So this is supposed to give us somewhat of an indication as to what time this is now. So we know from a few weeks ago, at the beginning of the movie, when we had Cochran, Miller and Garber, getting ready to go do their nefarious stuff, in the baggage area. Okay, they looked at their watches and they set their watches to 3:50. Okay, there's no way that this is only 40 minutes later. A lot has happened.
No. Okay,
because if you look at the board, so, on the departures, there is a flight that was supposed to depart for Hawaii at 4:30. Okay, and it says remarks closed. I don't know what that really means.
I don't know.
But
the 5:30 is.
And then you have 5:30, and then they're starting to delay things. So you have 5:30 is delayed, 5:45 is delayed. Those are to Denver and Toronto. Then you have a flight to Baltimore, okay, 6:01, and it also says closed. Maybe closed that people are already on the flight, but again, that doesn't make sense, an hour and a half difference here with that, because it's what time it will depart. Something that's been delayed, they'll change the time. That type of
Yeah.
thing. So basically, they show us time is between 4:30 and 7:10 for the departures, and for the arrivals, it shows us from 5:30 to 7:30. So the assumption is that maybe it's 5:15, 5:30 now, something like that. I still think it's much later because it doesn't make sense that all this happened within an hour or an hour and a half.
No, there's way too much. In fact, I mean, this is, I think, the part we're watching now is at about the 45-minute mark of the movie-ish area, somewhere in there.
42,
And
42 minutes into the movie.
yeah, 42 minutes. Okay, so we're 42 minutes into the movie right now. Yeah, there's absolutely no way all of that stuff went down in 45
Correct.
minutes.
Yeah,
Absolutely
especially
not.
after Cochran was dead, and you have the coroner come, and then he calls Al and gets the facts, and I mean,
Yeah, that's right. He learns the facts.
that's
He's
right.
getting friendly with
That's right.
technology.
I think he's getting more friendly with the girl behind the counter than with the technology, but okay, that's fine.
But it helped him. It helped him get what he needed.
Yes.
He got a honeypot
Yes. That is
a
very true.
little bit.
We'll
But
talk a little bit
yeah,
more about these
that's a
flight numbers
spot.
tomorrow. We'll get to that. So
Okay, cool.
that's all I have basically for the for this minute. Do you have anything you want to say about it before we get into the script?
No, I for me it was just more this whole scenario was just kind of like the airport etiquette because I haven't experienced it. Like I know that those things, particularly because I'm located in Detroit, we have a lot of stuff that is delayed regularly because of
Yes.
weather often. So but I hear it all the time with people where they do have delays and stuff. And I never heard that until recently, but it happens in movies all the time. Everything's delayed, everything's shut down. I'm like, that doesn't really happen that
Right.
often. More so in recent years, I've been aware of this happening, but I don't know how much it has to actually do with the weather rather than the airlines and being short-staffed and other problems
The
that we
human
have with
factor.
airlines in general. The
Unforeseen
human factor,
human
that's
factors.
right. Right there, you nailed
That's
it.
right.
Nailed it.
Right. So, yesterday I mentioned the fact that the script, this is actually the page before yesterday's minute happened, but it's pretty much word for word all of Trudeau's speech. They didn't change it at all. The one thing that it says here, it says at the beginning, Trudeau turns to Barnes and says, "Put me on all bands." And then it says Trudeau waits as switches are thrown and then takes the jack from the earphone he wears and jacks it into a panel. And then again, his speech goes through the whole thing. It says he turns to a tech face that's face ashened and then tells him to change the boards. And then it says angle of a bank of arrival monitors. Already a quarter of the planes are delayed by weather, but now in the domino-like pattern, all the remaining flight data changes to delayed. Camera adjusts to show people's reacting with frustration and concern.
Yeah, if they're there at the arrivals and they're picking people up, which again, that's a lot of people, but okay. They're picking people up and they know that their flight is due any minute. Or because of technology, they've talked to people on the airplane phones like Holly. They know that they're coming in or supposed to be coming in soon. Then yeah, I'm not gonna be mad that there's a delay. I'm going to be concerned. Mostly because of the weather. And how many people actually knew that people are getting shot up and killed? Well, a lot more are going to know real soon.
That is very true. Right, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Disaster Tuesday, which what I do is I try to highlight some sort of famous person who unfortunately was killed in some sort
Oh,
of
you're not helping my
aircraft
fear of flying
incident.
here. I'm well aware of most
So,
of these, so go ahead, proceed.
okay. All right, well, I usually try to find something similar or in a place close to where my guest is from, but from Detroit, I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find any famous people that were killed around, Detroit in a thing.
No, we've had a couple of crashes that were awful, but yeah.
Oh, for sure. I remember that Northwest one, but those are I don't go into those big ones. I'm just doing little ones, I don't want to be too drab here. I don't I want to try and keep things a little bit upbeat. I mean, so I talk about people that we sort of know.
talk about death via plane, but we're going to be upbeat about it. It's cool.
That's right. Very good. I'm glad. I'm glad you got the point of that, Heather. There you go. So I'm assuming you've heard of Will Rogers, right? Did you know that Will Rogers was killed in a plane crash? Okay, I did not know that. I had forgotten that information or didn't know it or whatever. So he actually was an advocate for the aviation industry, and he was very good friends with Charles Lindbergh, who was obviously the most famous aviator of the 1920s. When Rogers was in Europe in 1926, he saw all the different European advances, and he wanted to make changes in America to make to keep up with the Joneses, keep up with the Europeans, that type of thing. So in 1935, there's a famed aviator named Wiley Post, who wanted to start surveying mail and passenger air routes, basically to go from the West Coast to Russia. So what he did was he created his own type of plane. He took what was known as a Lockheed Explorer and connected it to a Lockheed or Orion. And, he put floats so that he could land in lakes in Alaska and Siberia. And so Will Rogers was good friends with him, and he would go visit him all the time at the airport in Burbank, where Post was constantly working and modifying his aircraft for this. And so at one point, Will Rogers asked Post to fly him to Alaska in order to search for new news stories. He was a newspaper columnist also, right? And so they did a test flight in July of 1935, and they made several stops in Alaska. And so Rogers then wrote all of his columns, on a typewriter in the plane as they were flying. And, he sent off all of his, stuff. And then they were getting ready to fly back on August 15th from Fairbanks to Point Barrow. Right. When they were 20 miles southwest of Point Barrow, they were having difficulty figuring their position because it was bad weather. And they tried landing in a lagoon to ask for directions. And then they took off again, but the engine failed of the plane. And then the aircraft then plunged into the lagoon and sheared off the right wing. And it flipped over and was in the shallow water of the lagoon. Both men died instantly. Of the crash that they had because of the fact that it flipped over. And, a week later, Rogers was buried in Glendale, California. And then he was moved in the end to Oklahoma, to the Will Rogers Memorial. There's a lot of disagreement as to what actually happened. They had ordered certain floats for the plane that didn't work. And that the design that they used was for a larger type of plane. So it already made the plane was nose heavy as is, and it made it even heavier, which is, they say, was one of the factors of how it flipped over. But then there's another group of scholars, I guess you can say, that say that that something else caused the crash. The fact that the cold weather and it stalled the airplane stalled or whatever it is. So unfortunately, the two of them were killed in this tragic accident. I know you don't live near Alaska.
No, I've heard that before. I don't remember what timeline it was, but I'm guessing it was probably about 10 to 15 years ago.
What timeline? We're not talking about the multiverse. Yes, we can.
I think it was that probably 10 or 15 years ago. I hadn't been on a plane since I was a small, small, small child, and I was terrified to fly. So what did I do? I started looking up famous people that had been killed in airplane crashes. But I found him on a list, so I knew that he was someone that had, but I didn't know any of the circumstances or where or any of it. That's pretty rough. Although at least he was in Alaska. It's beautiful there.
Yeah.
least it was a good place. Let's just, I guess, we're trying to be positive, but it was August, doom and death.
Yes, we are. But no, but you know, my idea here is that, you know, this is August, and you know, they were saying that that the weather was terrible. I guess maybe it was raining or whatever. It must not have been snowing, because I don't think it snows. And does it still snow in Alaska in August?
Depends on what part of Alaska, yeah. And right Fairbanks? Now it's all different. It's completely changing. Everything's starting to melt up top, and it's actually colder south in southern Alaska. Yeah, I watch way too many nature shows.
Yeah, probably. You know, you said that I read Wikipedia too much, and you apparently watch too many nature videos.
It's true. I know. It's ironic, because a lot of times, you know, you're in kids in junior high, middle school, high school, they're like, I don't know why I need to learn all this information. I'm never going to use it in my life. Yeah, well, I've been there, said it, did it. And then I'm the same person who's like, I would like to know about all of the mating rituals of dolphins. Please give me that information. I will watch 3 hours on this, even though it will have no impact on my life whatsoever. Yeah.
Maybe it will one day. I don't know.
Maybe I'll be on one of your shows 10 years from now.
And we'll be talking about dolphins.
That information. And you'll ask me a question about the mating rituals of dolphins, and I'll be here, and I'll actually have a correct answer for you.
Yeah, I'll do like blackfish, and you'll be able to say, oh, I know about you know, mammals. I know about mating. Who knows? I will mark that down and remember to invite you back for that, if that ever happens. Thanks. How's that? Is that a deal?
Deal.
All right, great. So, Heather, you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. You can find me on the interwebs all over the place. If you want to listen to the podcast, Mark Armstead and I do a Buffy rewatch show. It's called Word of Hellmouth. It's lots of fun. You can find it on any of your streaming services, all of them. It's on all of them, Spotify, the Googles, the Apples, all of that stuff. So you can go listen to us. And you should watch Buffy if you haven't, because Buffy is awesome.
Okay, fair enough. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,